Now from the KSFR Newsroom, At Noon looks at the top local news headlines for this Wednesday, October 30th.
The subject of Tuesday's Santa Fe SWAT pursuit, 32-year-old Robert Pacheco, remains at large today. Pacheco was wanted in connection with September's armed robbery of a Cerritos Road restaurant. Police around noon spotted Pacheco and sealed off the area, prompting Santa Fe Public Schools to enforce a shelter-in-place at Santa Fe High, as well as Capshaw and DeVargas Middle Schools. Pacheco had been believed to be holed up in a Calle Ensenada home, but managed to elude capture. He is considered armed and dangerous. More trouble for a Los Alamos National Laboratory security system. The Albuquerque Journal reports that work to fix the problem-plagued $244 million system will likely continue into February, 2 months past the expected completion. The Nuclear Material Safeguards and Security Upgrade Project was nearly completed 2 years ago when the lab discovered that it didn't work as it was supposed to. Cost overruns totaling $10 million will be paid by LANL's managing contractors to the federal government. New Mexico's two Democratic senators are supporting legislation in Washington that would end the U.S. government's dragnet collection of the phone records of ordinary citizens. Senators Udall and Heinrich say the move is to restore America's privacy rights by requiring greater oversight and accountability with respect to domestic surveillance authorities. The USA Freedom Act has the support of a diverse number of groups ranging from the National Rifle Association to the American Civil Liberties Union. A companion bill in the House has more than 70 bipartisan co-sponsors. Santa Fe City Councilors face a full agenda tonight with discussion on a number of issues, including a new fraud, waste, and abuse hotline, providing transportation to and from the Santa Fe ski area, and codifying charter amendments for a March special election. Voters will decide then on proposed charter amendments, including campaign contribution limits and expansion of mayoral powers. KSFR will broadcast the meeting, which starts at 5 p.m. Santa Fe County Commissioners Tuesday nominated Eldorado resident Ann Jenkins for the State House District 50 seat left vacant by the recent death of Representative Stephen Easley. Jenkins asked commissioners for their support and assurance.
Whoever sits in the Capitol next year, that you work with them and make sure that our Capitol needs for infrastructure improvement and funding are recognized and represented.
Jenkins, a Democrat, also has the support of Bernalillo County in the district that includes two other counties. Governor Martinez has the final say. Her choice is expected by Friday. The Government Finance Officers Association of the United States and Canada has honored Santa Fe County with its Distinguished Budget Award for the county's 2012 spending plan. County commissioners made the announcement Tuesday. County Budget Administrator Carol Jaramillo accepted the award and thanked Finance Department staffers for it.
I want to thank them, too, for contributing to the document, either whether it was directly contributing pages to the document or just holding us up while we were doing it. Our finance office division is a great family and a great team.
This is the fifth consecutive year the county has been so honored by the Government Finance Group. Capital High School will host a regional town hall meeting tonight on improving public education. The meeting is sponsored by Keep the Promise for New Mexico's Future. The nonprofit says the organization or the purpose of the town hall is to bring people together to talk about their vision for an ideal education system and discuss solutions to ensure a great school for every child. Tonight's meeting, from 6 to 7 p.m., is the third of four being held across the state. Also on the education front, Governor Susana Martinez is unveiling a new initiative today geared toward providing parents with informational tools to better engage in the daily activities of their school children. Called the New Mexico Parent Connection, Martinez will present the proposal that will help parents partner more easily with teachers later this afternoon at a Bernalillo middle school. Santa Fe's Solid Waste Management Agency has a new pilot program for recycling televisions along with other electronic waste. The recycling fee is 50 cents per 20 pounds. The agency is also starting a bicycle reuse program in partnership with the Chainbreaker Collective. You can drop off a bike or bike parts at the Buckman Road Transfer Station or directly to Chainbreaker on 5th Street Sunday afternoon. Weather for Santa Fe, mostly sunny today with a high in the low 50s, a 20% chance for showers. It'll be partly cloudy tonight and cold with lows in the mid-20s, along with a slight chance for snow showers. It'll be sunny and cool on Thursday, Thursday's high near 50. I'm Tom Tropridge, KSFR News.
Thank you, Tom. And taking a look at business and financial news at midday, General Motors has reported better-than-expected quarterly results, helped by strong trading in North America and reduced losses in Europe. Earnings in North America rose to $2.2 billion, up from $1.7 billion a year earlier. However, GM's European operations recorded a loss of $200 million, but expects future sales there to help them break even in that market by mid-decade. Spain has seen its first quarterly economic growth since 2011, according to data from the country's National Statistics Agency, INE. The country's GDP grew 0.1% in the July to September period, after contracting for the previous nine quarters. Its growth confirmed last week's estimates from the Bank of Spain. Spain was one of the countries worst hit by the global economic crisis, with street riots and soaring unemployment. The statistics mean Spain is officially out of recession. And taking a look at the big board on Wall Street at midday, all the major indices now treading negative territory. The Dow currently off 30 points at 15,649, the NASDAQ off 14 at 3,938, and the S&P 500 is down 5. It stands at 1,766. At noon on KSFR, we'll continue in just a moment.
Music and mathematics inspire our hearts and minds. Witness the majesty of music and mathematics Saturday, November 2nd, 7:30 at the Lenzic. Featuring great music, exhilarating video and narrative, Dr. Chris Moore of the Santa Fe Institute illuminates the beauty of music and mathematics with the Santa Fe Symphony, David Felberg conducting. Saturday, November 2nd, 7:30 at the Lenzic. For tickets, call 988-1234. A message from the tax-exempt Santa Fe Symphony.
13 minutes past the hour, as At Noon now segues to today's feature stories. New Mexico has two veterans cemeteries, one here in Santa Fe and the other in the southwest corner of the state. Their locations require many family members and friends of deceased veterans who want to attend or visit grave sites to travel long distances, or alternatively, have their loved ones buried somewhere else. Tim Hale, the New Mexico Secretary of Veterans Affairs, is trying to remedy that situation and joins us now. Secretary Hale, tell us about the situation.
New Mexico, we're blessed with a lot of land, and we're also blessed with two national cemeteries at Santa Fe and then down in the far southwest corner in Fort Baird National Cemetery at the old fort down in Silver City. But in between, there is just, as most people who travel New Mexico know, vast, vast distances. So for a veteran, and more importantly for the veteran's family, when it comes time to lay a veteran to rest, they have to make some tough choices. You know, do they have a family tradition of, you know, fairly regular visitation? And if so, if they live out in one of the rural areas of the state, traveling to Santa Fe, traveling to Fort Baird, really becomes a family burden. And not only that, but the United States Department of Veteran Affairs, their goal, you know, it's not in law, but their goal is to try and have an appropriate cemetery within 75 miles of a family. Yeah, because that's really, in most places in the country, that's an hour and a half, 2 hours distance. So we've come up with a plan. We're working with the federal government to try and come up with some ways to fill those huge gaps around the state.
And it also must be kept in mind, we suppose, that many family members like to visit their loved one's gravesite regularly.
Exactly. And that's really the genesis of, you know, the program here in New Mexico, and that's what drives that policy via federal VA. You know, it's that understanding that life doesn't end for the whole family when someone's interred and when someone's buried. So to continue that celebration of life, it's appropriate to be able to, you know, in most of our cultures, to be able to go visit that grave, to honor the, you know, the person, and to really build those family ties. So that's really what we're shooting for.
Now, you've mentioned that you're working with the federal government on this. Does that mean the feds will foot the bill, or will the state be on the hook for some of the costs?
And that's a great question that we hear. And it's really, it's yes to both. The federal government has a grant program that pays for the building of the cemetery. What we as a state are committed to is to take care of that cemetery at a national monument status. You know, just like you were to go to Arlington, just like you were to go to one of the really large national cemeteries, just like they do such a great job at Santa Fe National Cemetery. You know, we will do that as a state. We'll have a very small division in my department that will be tasked with the care and maintenance forever of that that national shrine.
So for any new site, the state will be required to pay all the upkeep.
The state will be responsible for it. So it'll either be state employees, or we'll work arrangements with the locales. If they already have a cemetery staff, we might work memorandums of agreement, those sorts of things, between the state and the local government. A number of options that can be looked at on that, but the biggest thing is just to simply try and get this process going. You know, we're in the initial stages right now. We will work with the governor and the legislative staff to, you know, really make a tough decision about where the best three or four places that we can put those applications in for the federal grant program and continue to shepherd those over the next year or so.
Where would you like to locate the new facilities?
Well, we're looking more at the quadrants within the state, not the specific towns at this point. We have gone and held town hall meetings all over the southeast, at Roswell, Carlsbad, Hobbs, Alamogordo. We've been up in the more in the northeast, Angel Fire, Taos, Gallup, Grants, Farmington. So we are going all over the state. And when you look at the map with where Santa Fe, Fort Baird, and even down in the southeast, Fort Bliss over in Texas are located, you can almost see that the natural flow. We need one more in the southeast. We need one more in the northeast, and we need something that will cover the west and northwest. Because again, the southwest is really covered by Fort Baird National Cemetery.
And Secretary Hale, anything else you'd like to share with our listeners on this?
Well, the main thing is, you know, that, you know, we're doing the town halls with the governor and the lieutenant governor and their staffs. The next big step is, as we come into this 30-day legislative session, is the state needs to show their willingness to be in this program by offering a 10% match. So we're looking for a $600,000 bill from the legislature to get us into the mix with the federal VA. Now, the great thing about the federal program is that simply shows the state's true commitment. Once we break ground, all that money comes back into the state general fund. So it really is paid for by the federal government, and then we shepherd that forever, and we get that initial 10% seed money, if you want to call it that, back into the general fund. So we need everyone out there to start talking with their legislators. We're trying to, you know, build that support as well, because without the legislative action to grant the seed money, the program will be dead in the water until we can meet again next year.
Secretary Tim Hale from Veterans Affairs, many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR, which will continue in just a moment.
KSFR is supported by the City of Santa Fe and is proud to air the full live Santa Fe City Council meetings beginning at 5 p.m. on the second and last Wednesday of every month from the City Council Chambers at 200 Lincoln Avenue. Agendas and packets for City Council meetings are available on the Friday prior to each City Council meeting on their website, santafenm.gov. To get on the City Council agenda, contact the City Clerk at 955-6521.
20 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. We've learned today that a federal government agency has reversed an earlier permission from the U.S. Bureau of Land Management for Peabody Energy to expand operations at the El Segundo Strip Mine in northwestern New Mexico. For environmentalists, the reversal is a significant win. One of the advocacy groups that argued against the expansion is Wild Earth Guardians. We're joined now by the organization's Director of Climate and Energy Programs, Jeremy Nichols. Jeremy, give us an overview of the matter and how this new resolution came to pass.
So Peabody Energy, which we all know Peabody, they're one of the biggest coal mining companies in the world, actually. They own and operate the El Segundo coal mine, which is near Crown Point over in McKinley County. And they had applied for a new lease from the Bureau of Land Management, a new federal coal lease. They wanted to secure 11.2 million tons of additional coal to help expand the El Segundo mine, which right now is the biggest coal mine in the state of New Mexico. We saw a lot of problems with this coal lease. I think the most significant of which was the fact that all this coal is going to be burned. And as we know, burning coal releases massive amounts of carbon dioxide. And an age that we're in right now where we are increasingly straining the limits of how much carbon our atmosphere can absorb, and we're seeing the consequences of global warming, from our perspective, this was simply the wrong move.
So we've now seen the Interior Board of Land Appeals in Washington reverse that decision. Speak to your organization's role in securing that outcome.
So the BLM approved the Peabody's request for a new coal lease, and we did file an appeal with the Interior Board of Land Appeals. And, you know, among other things, we argued that the BLM didn't even consider the implications of coal burning. And, you know, I mean, coal is mined for one reason, and that is to be burned. It's not used for anything else, not used for landscaping or anything. And so we called out the BLM, and we told the Interior Board of Land Appeals, hey, these guys didn't do their due diligence here. They rushed to a decision. Apparently just to appease Peabody, and you should overturn this decision. Now, surprisingly, the BLM, the Bureau of Land Management, seemed to realize the error of its ways because they filed a motion with the board for a voluntary remand. They basically asked the board to overturn their decision, which is kind of surprising. It's not every day you see an agency say, hey, we did this so wrong that we think you should overturn us and send us back to the drawing board. But that's exactly what happened here. And so late yesterday, we got notice from the Board of Land Appeals that it's official. The decision is remanded. It's sent back to the agency. It's essentially overturned. And so they're back at square one. And what they're going to do next, you know, we're not quite sure. We sincerely hope that they reconsider appeasing Peabody. I think that there's... you know, there are better decisions to be made here, and I think decisions that don't prioritize fossil fuels and that don't condone the impacts of more carbon emissions and other impacts associated with coal combustion.
And though the El Segundo mine is located here in New Mexico, much of its coal is destined for our neighboring state of Arizona, yes?
It is, and you know, right now the El Segundo coal mine is the primary fuel source for several eastern Arizona coal-fired power plants. Peabody's aim was to continue to provide that fuel for those power plants. And so, yes, I mean, it's basically New Mexico exporting its fuel to Arizona to fuel their energy needs. But frankly, you know, there's a better outcome here. There's a better solution for New Mexico and Arizona. And I think that's not sinking more investments into more coal mining and more coal burning. It's time for the Bureau of Land Management to start to play a role in helping us transition to clean energy. And New Mexico could definitely play a leading role in that regard. It has as a state generally, but we need the federal government to come along as well. And so, you know, for the BLM to just, from our perspective, rubber stamp Peabody's coal plants was a big mistake, and we're seeing that clearly play out here, and hopefully they won't make the same mistake again.
And just to put a finer point on the issue, this new decision doesn't affect current Peabody Energy operations at the El Segundo mine. It merely prevents expansion, correct?
That's correct. I mean, they're still mining. This isn't about shutting them down today. You know, we understand that there are economies, there are workers that depend on coal right now. We need to come together and work on an orderly transition away from fossil fuels. I mean, the writing is on the wall in terms of climate science and the need to curtail greenhouse gas emissions. know, we have people saying that the best thing we can do for the climate right now is to keep coal in the ground, keep that carbon in the ground. So that's our goal. Now, in the meantime, we do need to come together. We need to find a way to ensure that as we transition, that we're not putting people out of house and home. That would be irresponsible, and that's not what we're advocating for. But we do need to be realistic that we can't possibly confront global warming if we are continuing to strip mine and burn more coal.
Jeremy Nichols with Wild Earth Guardians. Many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR.
KSFR programming is underwritten in part by Greenfire Times, a new monthly publication focusing on all things green, including health, healing, organic foods, nutrition, permaculture, sustainability, green-collar jobs, and renewable energy. Greenfire Times is distributed at newsstands from Albuquerque to Taos. More information and an online edition can be found at greenfiretimes.com.
12:26 here in the KSFR newsroom as At Noon continues. Casino gambling on Native American pueblos has been legal in New Mexico since 1997, and gamblers in the Land of Enchantment also have access to gambling at horse race tracks and, of course, the New Mexico Lottery. And now, the Navajo Nation plans on expanding its gambling operations in neighboring Arizona. With the proliferation of gambling opportunities in and around New Mexico, there's been a corresponding increase in the number of problem gamblers. Rejoining us now at the news desk is KSFR's Tom Trowbridge. Tom, what do we know about gambling addiction in our state?
Well, Dan, experts say that despite the tough economy, the number of people addicted to gambling...
I'm sorry, Tom. Let me ask you that question again, because I know we put a lot of effort into this report. I was asking you, what do we know about gambling addiction in our state?
Well, Dan, experts say despite the tough economy, the number of people addicted to gambling has remained relatively steady.
Do you know how prevalent the gambling addiction is?
Well, yes, you'll find out now in my story.
It's estimated that 3% of the population develops an addiction to gambling. However, according to Candace Blanchard, executive director of the New Mexico Council on Problem Gambling, the state is prepared to assist those with problem wagering. Blanchard says the council has some 60 therapists at the ready.
60 may not sound like a lot to you, but it keeps us from being decentralized, so we cover the entire state and border cities. So, for instance, in Las Vegas, Nevada, they only have 6 certified gambling counselors.
Blanchard adds that problem gamblers tend to cross socioeconomic lines. Does the holiday season prompt an increase in gambling? No, says Blanchard.
For a problem gambler, it might make it worse because they don't have the money to buy gifts, and so, or else worse, tax time comes and they get their spouse gets a tax form in the mail and for the winnings, and they didn't, you know, they don't have the ability to pay the taxes, and they weren't aware. A lot of this is hidden. It's not like other addictions. Physical addictions are easier for the family to see.
Additional casinos, says Blanchard, aren't perceived as much of a problem due to the number of gambling opportunities, including casinos, racinos, and lotteries.
With the Navajo Nation, I don't think it's going to cause any more problems. Right now, I think people are just kind of competing for the same base of the population that either gambles for recreation or the problem gambler. So there's not more people gambling. There's just more establishments. They're just sharing the revenue.
Blanchard says New Mexico has done extremely well in handling problem gambling. She credits the foresight of former Governor Gary Johnson, who she says insisted on separate statutes on the lottery, overseeing casino gambling on Native American pueblos, and on racetrack wagering.
Each one has language in it to provide 0.25% of their net take for New Mexicans in New Mexico and people that are here gambling that present with a problem.
The New Mexico Council on Problem Gambling continues to offer a toll-free helpline.
That helpline is bilingual. It's activated 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And we have professionals, including myself, on call at all times. We answer the phone directly. And that population, that once they get to a point to call us, it's either a family member or the gambler themselves, they're usually in debt, and they're reaching out for help.
Blanchard says those who handled the helpline are cognizant of the seriousness of the issue.
At that point, we decide if they're suicidal or not, because that population normally is about 6 times higher, more likely to commit suicide than the average population.
The helpline number is 1-800-GAMBLER. For KSFR, I'm Tom Tropridge.
Music and mathematics inspire our hearts and minds. Witness the majesty of music and mathematics Saturday, November 2nd, 7:30 at the Lenzic. Featuring great music, exhilarating video and narrative, Dr. Chris Moore of the Santa Fe Institute illuminates the beauty of music and mathematics with the Santa Fe Symphony, David Felberg conducting. Saturday, November 2nd, 7:30 at the Lenzic. For tickets, call 988-1234. A message from the tax-exempt Santa Fe Symphony.
An event later in the week is going to allow Santa Fe residents to discuss what is right and what is wrong with our lifestyle. Curious? Actually, so are we. Here's KSFR's Charles Maynard with the story.
Santa Fe has long attracted residents who love the lifestyle. Now, with the help of a city councilor, residents can learn and share about what makes our city work and make suggestions on how to improve it. City Councilor Carmichael Dominguez is presiding over a 2-day conference on improving the quality of life here in Santa Fe, beginning on Friday, November 1st.
Well, this is really a continuation of work that I've been doing for about 2.5 years now on trying to do what I can from a city legislative perspective on improving people's quality of life. And what we're doing is on Friday, November 1st, we're going to feature a series of panels and community discussions focused on just that, improving people's quality of life in Santa Fe. And then on Saturday, November 2nd, we will be kicking off a series of listening sessions. And so the first listening session will happen on Saturday, November 2nd at 9:30. And then after the listening session, we're going to have a community fiesta with some mariachi music, Zumba, cooking demonstrations, and a bunch of organizations that will be tabling that day as well.
A listening session is a unique opportunity for the public to voice its concerns.
Well, the listening session is really an opportunity for me to ask 3 questions to the constituency. Number one, what is working well? Number two, what is not working well? And number three, what are your recommendations to fix it? So those are the 3 main questions. But really, it's for constituents to go, voice their concerns, and then for me to listen, take notes, and after a whole series of those, we hope to be able to start drafting policy.
Dominguez has his own ideas about what is working and what needs improving.
Well, I think the best thing that's working is that we actually, through the work that I've been doing, have been able to amend our land use law to introduce architectural integrity into the area and place some legislation or restrictions, if you will, on alcohol outlet densities, advertising, and the elimination of miniature sales. So those things are working well. We have full compliance, I think, as of May. The challenge that we have is to sustain a community effort.
He expects a large crowd.
We're expecting quite a few people on Friday. We don't have a number, although we've gotten a lot of people who are interested and have shown interest in attending, and a number of people that have said the same thing for Saturday. So breakfast will be served on Saturday. We've got someone that's going to provide free breakfast on Saturday, and on Friday we will be providing lunch as well. The event is going to be at Zona del Sol, which is right across from the Southside Library. The address is 6601 Jaguar Drive, and it's right there on the corner of Jaguar and Country Club Road.
City Councilor Carmichael Dominguez.
I would just encourage Southside residents, and any resident for that matter, to attend.
For more information on the event, go to the city's website. For KSFR News, I'm Charles Maynard.
12:35 now here in the KSFR newsroom, just past the bottom of the hour, and once again the perfect time to spend 60 seconds with our resident curmudgeon, Christopher Hagen.
I was watching the movie Red Dawn, not the most recent version, but the one from 1984 with Patrick Swayze, Powers Booth, Harry Dean Stanton, C. Thomas Howell, and apparently more anger-managed Charlie Sheen. In a minor supporting role, Jennifer Grey, who 3 years later starred with Swayze in Dirty Dancing. Now, as an aside, I'm not a dancer, but if I were a dancer, I would probably be a dirty dancer. Leaving that image behind, Red Dawn is about the Russians. When they were bad, well, they're still bad, but they were badder in the 80s, invading part of the United States, and how we were saved by a group of high school athletes. Go team, save our country, save our way of life. Anyway, the storyline of Red Dawn got me to thinking, what if we were invaded by some other group like vegans or Rosicrucians or, God forbid, Laplanders? If we were invaded by Laplanders, we'd all probably be doing lap dances. Who said that? For KSFR, I'm Christopher Hagen.
And with that, we'll conclude today's edition of At Noon, KSFR's extended noon news hour. Dan Garrity with you here at the news desk, with many thanks to my contributing colleagues today, Tom Trowbridge and Charles Maynard. We'll be back with more news of and for New Mexico for you tomorrow, and as always, we hope you join us.